Today's show is presented by Prize Picks. Go to prizepicks.com and use code PACKADAY for a $100 deposit match.
Minutes a day, 365 days a year. This is the Pack-A-Day Podcast.
What's going on, everybody? Happy Wednesday. Welcome into an all-new episode of the Pack-A-Day Podcast. I'm your host, Andy Herman. You can follow me on Twitter at Andy Herman NFL. You can follow the podcast at Pack-A-Day Podcast. Appreciate you guys being here. It is Wednesday. It's not just any Wednesday. It is a Packers OTA Wednesday. More importantly, it's an OTA that's open to the media. I will be there. I will try to be the eyes and ears for all of you guys out there, tweeting everything out. And of course, tomorrow I will be back here breaking everything down that I saw from Wednesday's OTA. I'm hoping it's going to be a more sped up version. I'm hoping we're going to get some more competitive periods, but whatever it ends up being, you know, there's going to be some key takeaways. And again, I'll be right back here tomorrow to break it all down. So make sure to subscribe, hit that little button below, so you're making sure every single time there's a new episode, you're notified of it. Make sure to like, comment, give those 5-star reviews, tell a friend. And of course, as always, check out those Pack-A-Day Podcast YouTube memberships as well. Speaking of which, shout out to Lauren Nadolf for signing up. Appreciate that a ton. But for all of you, just appreciate all of you for supporting the show in any way that you are doing so. And again, if you're just showing up today for the first time, appreciate that a ton as well. So thank you for being here. There was one piece of news and notes from Tuesday that I want to go over really quickly before we get to our main topic for today, and that is the NFL Players Association is looking to eliminate the OTA period entirely and sort of bring that into training camp. We don't know all the details yet, how this would affect rookie mini camps, how this would affect the actual mini camp. Would this affect the, you know, voluntary off-season programs that aren't the actual OTA, meaning like the weight room stuff and things like that? Or is it just the OTAs? We don't know everything yet. But what it seems like is the NFL Players Association is trying to get an extended rest period from the time the season ends, really up until the time that training camp would start. And in order to do so, what they're looking to sort of do, again, it seems like, is sort of take that OTA session and that mini camp session and eliminate it in that May period, the period we're in right now, and bring it over to July so that really the start of the offseason program would begin maybe late June, early July, and training camp and all of that would just kick off earlier. And then they would just be at their team facilities starting at that time and then throughout the season. And the trade-off here is once the season's done, then there'd be far less time that they would have to spend, you know, in the team facilities and doing OTAs and mini camps and those sort of things up until the time that they actually have to return again in mid-June or early July, whatever that might be. It's basically just taking the same amount of time that they're with the team. And rather than having it, you're going to the team, you're going back home, you're going to the team, you're going back home, and kind of have it being a little bit more disjointed, it's just moving it to later in the off season. So it's all in one fell swoop. And apparently, I think the NFL Players Association believes that this is better for the players' bodies. They get more extended rest, and then you don't have that aggressive ramp-up period where all of a sudden you get back to the team for training camp and training camp starts and it's just you have to go a million miles per hour right away. You kind of have that natural ramp-up where these slow-paced OTAs that we saw a week ago, maybe that's beginning of July, and then a more advanced OTA the next week, and then your mini camps the following week, and then you go into training camp, but you've already ramped up by going from OTAs to mini camps and then into training camp in one, you know, extended time period rather than that, again, disjointed 6 weeks off between that last mini camp practice and the start of training camp. Personally, without really vetting out everything, it seems like it would make some sense if the players believe that it's better for their bodies in the offseason to do that. I'm all for that as well. As far as content creation goes, yeah, I kind of like a little bit more of that ability to talk about OTAs and mini camps during this time, but it's just sort of, again, you know, moving the needle one way and switching it back the other. And it's just, it's taking the same information and moving it to different time periods. But overall, I'm for it. And if that's what the Players Association wants, I'm cool with it. It seems to make sense, but whether or not it gets approved, that remains to be seen. That would have to be something that would be agreed upon, not just by the NFL Players Association, but by the owners as well. And we'll see if anything comes of that, but certainly something to kind of keep an eye on moving forward. And that would certainly change sort of the off-season pattern a little bit from what we are normally used to. All right, let's get into today's main topic. And today's main topic, let's just be transparent, is not going to be necessarily for everyone. Yesterday's topic was the Packers' biggest strengths. Today's topic is going to be the Packers' biggest weaknesses. And I know there are some fans that don't really want to delve too much into the weaknesses, that don't want to necessarily delve into the negatives. They just want to keep the glass half full, remain positive. The Packers are all about being fun and enjoying the game, and they don't want to necessarily concern themselves with that point. That's okay. That's totally fine. Go back and watch yesterday's episode if you have not yet. And there are a ton of great strengths with this team that are really fun to break down. We did it yesterday. I really enjoyed yesterday's episode. And I promise you, I probably enjoyed yesterday's episode more than I'm going to enjoy this one. But this is, as best as I can do, a realistic podcast. It is a realistic show that's going to give you every single angle that I possibly can. And if we're being real, every single team in the NFL has their strengths and every single team has their weaknesses. And I think the sooner that we can come to grips with what those weaknesses are, I think the sooner that we can, one, be prepared for some of those potential blind spots. And number two, I think we can sort of keep a better eye on it to watch, are these things improving? It is very few and far between where a team is just the odds-on favorite to begin the season. Everything goes perfect through the entirety of the year. They go through the playoffs in the Super Bowl, and they just go on to be champions. There's just no perfect team. There's going to be issues along the way. There's going to be adversity along the way. And there are going to have to be things that you improve upon and get better at. So let's address those things head on and say, these are the weaknesses. These are the things that the Packers have to do a better job of if they want to actually hoist that Lombardi trophy. And that's what we all want them to do. We want them to be Super Bowl champions again. And if that's going to be the case, not only do they need to accentuate their strengths that we talked about yesterday, but they have to mitigate the weaknesses. And it doesn't mean that they have to overnight make them perfect, but they need to continuously progress and get better and try to eliminate as many of these as they possibly can, while also understanding it's probably never going to be perfect. But let's address them head on. Let's tackle them and let's review what Green Bay's weaknesses are, and then maybe how they can kind of go about attacking and getting better at these specific things so they can be more well-prepared and well-rounded for 2024. And number one on this list, you saw the thumbnail if you're on YouTube, it has to be special teams. It just feels like it has to be special teams. In the last 3 years, per Rick Goslin's annual special teams rankings, which are the gold standard for special teams rankings, the Packers have ranked 32nd, 22nd, and 29th in those special teams rankings. In that 32nd ranked season, that was Mo Drayton's final season, the special teams legitimately and literally cost the Packers an opportunity to go to the championship game. They lost in the divisional round that year to the 49ers, in large part due to a special teams collapse at the end of the season, or at the end of that game, I should say. Now, the offense didn't play great. We can address that as well. But the special teams, with that block punt at the end of the game, amongst other issues, were a massive reason why the Packers did not go on and play in that NFC Championship game. And that got Mo Drayton fired, and in comes Rich Bisaccia. And I talked about so much that offseason of, hey, this is not going to happen overnight. This has been a massive issue for an extremely long period of time. You don't just hire a new coordinator and say, well, that should fix it. I equated it at the time to, you've got a restaurant that's in a crappy location with bad infrastructure, bad ingredients, bad employees, bad everything. You can't just hire a new chef and say, well, we got a new chef, everything's fixed. You still have bad ingredients, bad infrastructure, bad location, bad everything, right? You just can't fix it with one thing. And to Green Bay's credit, they did try to address it in some different ways. They played some more prominent players on special teams. They added players to the roster that were A, Rich Bisaccia guys, but B, core special teamers. It kind of felt like they took those last few roster spots and instead of saying, hey, we're going to keep those for guys that are redshirting, guys like Alex Light or Tim Boyle or Yash Nyman or those sort of players, and said, we're going to keep those guys or those spots for guys like Dallin Levitt, Christian Welch, and more core special teams guys. We're going to put some effort into this to actually improve that unit. Rich Bisaccia got to hire multiple assistants that he was familiar with. They put the resources into it to get better. And that first year showed some signs of progress. They went from 32nd to 22nd. That's a pretty significant jump. Meanwhile, Keyshawn Nixon became an all-pro kick returner, and they looked like they were headed in the right direction. Only for the Packers then, in 2023, to fall back to 29th. The field goal kicking was atrocious. The returning was not as dynamic. There were some key fumbles on returns. There were some catastrophic mistakes throughout the season. You had some up and down moments overall, but it's still equated to the 29th overall special teams. That's not good enough. I mean, you just have to be so good at everything else to make up for a special teams unit that is abysmal, that is in the bottom three teams in the entire league at an entire phase of football. It is one thing if we're just talking about coverage or just kick. We're talking about all of it combined. Punt coverage, punt returns, kick returns, field goal kicking, extra point kicking, punting, like all of it. We're talking about all of it. And it's just not been good enough for basically forever. It has to find a way to get better. And I have been preaching for years, I don't need it to be a top 10 special teams. I don't need it to be a top 5. I don't even need it to be a top 12. Maybe not even a top 5. Can you be middle of the pack? In that meaty 14 to 17 range, maybe 16 to 18 I'd even take. Can you get to that range? Just where it's maybe not winning you games, but it's not losing you games either. You're just going to be middle of the road. There's probably going to be some teams that are better at it than you. There's going to be plenty of teams that are worse at it than you, but you're right in that middle portion of it. If Green Bay could get there, it would be a significant win. But there are a few things that I feel super confident about with this special teams. Let's start with kicker. Anders Carlson, Greg Joseph, Jack Podlesny, there's not any of it that I feel super confident in right now. And that goes to long snapper as well. I'm excited that they went and got Peter Bowden from Wisconsin and that some people like Dane Brugler thought he was the number one long snapping prospect in the draft this past year, although he went undrafted, of course. That's great. But Matt Orzech was poor a season ago. And we don't know what a college long snapper is going to bring to the table at this point. The coverage has been spotty. The punting's been better with Daniel Whalen. We still know that Keyshawn Nixon has the ability to be a dynamic returner. But again, it wasn't quite as dynamic a season ago. Wasn't the game-changing, you know, version of Nixon that we saw from 2 years ago. I think we all think that the kick return rules are going to benefit Nixon and his playmaking ability. But we also know it's going to benefit the other kick return teams as well. And Green Bay's kick coverage has not exactly been something that you're super excited about over the last, 30 years. I don't need to remind you that there was once an offensive lineman that returned a kick like 90 yards down to the Packers 3-yard line against the New England Patriots. That was still one of the darkest memories in special teams history for any team ever. And oh, by the way, we can talk about that divisional loss to the 49ers. I don't need to remind you about the stuff that went on in the Seahawks. It's just been a nightmare. And it's been every special teams coordinator. Like, there hasn't been a clear answer to the problem. I can't personally look you in the eye and say, this is it. This is the thing that's holding them back. Because they've tried to change the culture in special teams. We should have known maybe that this wasn't going to work when they tried calling it WeFence. But at least, my goodness, at least they tried rebranding it. They tried new coaches, assistant coaches. They've tried a little bit of everything. But they have not been able to turn the corner on it. This has to be a year for Rich Bisaccia as he gets that assistant. You know, he's already had that assistant head coach title. He's one of the highest paid, if not the highest paid, special teams coordinators in the league. It's time to put up or shut up. And it's up to Brian Gutekunst too, to make sure that he gets that kicker position right. They've got to find an answer there. If it's not Anders, if it's not Joseph, it's not Podlesny. I mean, good luck finding another kicker, but they've got to find a way to get that right. They got to keep the right long snapper. They need Daniel Whalen to carry over what he started to accomplish a season ago. Keyshawn Nixon needs to get back into form and be that key playmaker with these new kick return rules. But there's a lot for this special teams to improve upon. It hasn't been good enough. It hasn't been good enough for an extremely long period of time. And now it is time for Rich Bisaccia to finally get this group turned around and playing at the level that it needs to be able to play at if this Packers team wants it to have a legitimate shot of, again, going to the Super Bowl, winning it. You can't just count on offense and defense alone. It's got to be all three units, and it's got to be more cohesive, playing a complementary brand of football in all three phases. Hey friends, I don't know about you guys, but I am getting more and more excited about the NBA Finals coming up. It's certainly looking like it's going to be Celtics-Mavs, but regardless of the matchups, the Finals should be absolutely epic. But of course, they could be even more epic with Prize Picks. The Finals mean more on Prize Picks, and so do the star players. You get boosted payouts on select basketball stars that you will not find anywhere else. And while the Finals promise to be exciting, the hoops action doesn't stop when the Finals are over. Women's basketball is just getting started, and young stars like Caitlin Clark, Angel Reese, and Cameron Brink are immediately making a significant impact in the WNBA. And you, yes you, could win up to 100 times your cash watching them ball out with Prize Picks. You guys know by now how much I'm enjoying Prize Picks. It's completely changed my fantasy sports experience for the better. I'm already excited about my picks for this week. I'm going with Breanna Stewart, and I'm expecting a monster bounce back from Anthony Edwards against the Mavs. I'm still feeling bullish on Caitlin Clark as well, and I'm expecting her to become more and more efficient as the season goes along. So what are you waiting for? Get in on the action with Prize Picks right now. Download the app today and use code PACKADAY for a first deposit match up to $100. That's the Prize Picks app using code PACKADAY for a first deposit match up to $100. Prize Picks. Pick more, pick less. It's that easy. Number two is a strength from yesterday, but a weakness today. And that is youth and inexperience. Now, I love the youth of this Packers team, and there are a ton of positives that come along with that. This is a young man's game. The younger the body, the less wear and tear, the more likely to get hurt, the faster, the stronger, the more agile, all those things. I think it's overall a benefit. But with youth also comes inexperience. Now, I will say this. What they were able to do a season ago, and the fact that they made the playoffs, got a huge playoff win on the road in Dallas, and then experienced that heartbreak against the 49ers, that is incredibly important experience for this young team. I mean, they almost didn't make the playoffs. To not get that experience would have been brutal. But then to go to the playoffs and have that experience of winning, have that experience of losing, that hardens you as a player. Like, you have to go through some of that. There are very few teams, I'll say it again, that again, don't have to overcome adversity, that just go to the playoffs for the first time. And they're like, yep, we can just dominate this. We know how this is going to go. And then just run right through the playoffs. It doesn't work that way. You usually have to experience some heartbreak. You usually have to go through a playoffs to understand the difference in game speed that takes place and the different way that things are called and the intensity. It's all different come playoff time. The weather, the fans, all of it. The fact that Green Bay got that experience last year with this young core is immeasurably important. We see this not just in the NFL, right? Look at the Oklahoma City Thunder, and to an extent the Minnesota Timberwolves, but especially the Thunder. And what they finished, second or third in the West this year? I forget which team. Maybe they were first. Either way, they were an extremely good team this past year in the NBA. But you kind of knew going in, this is their first time in the playoffs, and they were going to have to go through some learning curves. And that's exactly what we saw. I have no doubt in the next couple seasons, OKC is going to continue to improve. But they needed to kind of go through that and experience that. And now they're going to be better for it moving forward. And the same goes for this Packers team. They had to experience a little bit of that, and they got it. But this is still a very young team. The expectations are insanely high. They're going from a team that had zero expectations and no idea what Jordan Love was going to be to now a lot of people thinking Jordan Love is legitimately an MVP candidate and that this team is a legitimate Super Bowl contender. And by the way, I agree with both of those sentiments. I believe that Jordan Love is an MVP candidate, and I believe the Packers are a Super Bowl contender. But that is a huge jump from no expectations a season ago to literally the highest expectations for a player and a team that you can possibly get. How this team responds to that will go a long way in determining what type of season this Packers team has. But they still have a long ways to go before they have experienced all the things they need to experience. That's not to say that they can't win it this year, but there are things that you need to learn. There's a reason why veteran experience is also something that is, you know, thought highly of. But for this team in particular, still very young, there's still a lot of players that are a year, 2 years, 3 years away from hitting their true prime. And it is up to the coaching staff and the veterans that are on this team, guys like Kenny Clark, guys like Preston Smith, Eric Wilson, and Elgton Jenkins. We can go on and on, but it's up to those guys, Josh Jacobs, to Xavier McKinney, to bring this team along and help them through this process of gaining this experience in real time. Because, like I said, it is still a very young team. We talked about what yesterday and the strengths. You know, everyone's almost 26 or under. The only players 27 or older, Jair Alexander, Zane Anderson, Tyler Davis, Corey Ballantyne, Kenny Clark, Andre Dillard, Elgton Jenkins, Alex Magoo, Greg Joseph, Matt Orzech, Eric Wilson. And the only player that's 30 or older is Preston Smith at age 31. That's it. It's a young team. With that comes fresh legs, better health a lot of times, but it also can come with some boneheaded mistakes. It's going to be important that Green Bay learns from those mistakes when they do happen and takes the necessary steps from the coaches and the veteran players on this team to make sure that they are ready for those big moments in 2024. Number three, offensive line depth. I have a lot of questions along the offensive line, and I've talked about this a little bit. I talked about it being the biggest need for the Packers in the offseason. They addressed it with Andre Dillard, with more importantly, Jordan Morgan, Jacob Monk, Travis Glover. They put three draft picks into it. Their highest paid undrafted free agent they put into it. A free agent signing in Andre Dillard they put into it. So they put some resources into this. But here's where I'm at. There are two players that I am comfortable with in a significant way along the offensive line. Elgton Jenkins and Zach Tom. Those two feel very good about. I feel pretty good about Rashid Walker. I feel less great about Josh Myers and Sean Ryan. And then we get into the world of unknowns. We think that Jordan Morgan is going to be able to come in and play right away and be a contributor. That's a rookie player. Until you see him out on the field, you're not always sure what you're going to get. And maybe it's the high upside that we think he's capable of. Maybe he shows some of those flaws that he showed at Arizona. We're going to have to wait and see. But even beyond that, even if the five starters and Sean Ryan and Josh Myers and those guys, Rashid Walker, Jordan Moore, whatever, whoever five starts, even if those guys are good, even if number six, whoever that is, whether it's Jordan Morgan, Sean Ryan, Josh Myers, whoever that six guys, we feel like there's six starting guys kind of here, right? Even if you get past that, you're going to need more than that. And then you still get into the land of the unknown. You still have Luke Tenuta, Caleb Jones, Royce Newman, you know, Jacob Monk, Travis Glover, Donovan Jennings, you know, Kadeem Telford. There's just a ton of unknowns along that offensive line. And you're going to need 7, 8, 9 guys to get through the season because of the injuries that will, I'm sure, certainly take place. So it is up to the depth on this offensive line to step up. I talked about yesterday the draft and develop in the philosophy and the coaching that goes into developing these players along the offensive line has been fantastic. You know, we've seen it over and over and over that they're able to find late round picks and turn them into, you know, starting gems along the offensive line. Zach Tom, such a great example of that. Now it's up to Adam Stenovich and Luke Butkus and this offense to get the rest of these guys up to speed because they're going to need them. And I've talked about all offseason, it is paramount that you give Jordan Love time, that he can continue on his progression, that you give Josh Jacobs the ability to run the football, and that you allow the key playmakers time to develop down the field. And then you're going to have a high-powered offense. There's no two ways about it. They're going to have a supercharged, talented offense if they just protect Jordan Love and open up those alleys for Josh Jacobs. It's going to be a very difficult offense to stop. But if Sean Ryan, Josh Myers, Jordan Morgan, Rashid Walker aren't up to it, and if the depth does not step up when needed, it could make this potentially dream season. I don't want to be cliche and say a nightmare, but it could definitely change things a lot for the worse. And I have legitimate concerns over that. I think there are legitimate possible answers to this as well. They did address it. It's not like Goody just went and said, all right, see ya Yash Nyman, see ya John Runyon Jr., see ya David Bakhtiari, and just not do anything about it. Andre Dillard, Jordan Morgan, you know, Travis Glover, Jacob Monk, Donovan Jennings, he put some resources into this. But they got to develop those guys and make sure that they are ready because, like I said, a lot of those guys are going to be needed at some point this season. Number four, tackling. Tackling's been an issue for far too long. They had 101 missed tackles a season ago. That was tied for 18th or 14th most, however you want to look at it. That is a lot of missed tackles. Now, it's not worst. You know, they could have been 32nd, 30th, or whatever. They were 18th. It's not great, but it's not brutal. But 101 is still far too many. If you look at the two Super Bowl teams, the 49ers had the second fewest missed tackles with 69, and the Chiefs had the sixth fewest with 76. The Cowboys led the way with only 63. The difference between 63 missed tackles and 101 missed tackles is a lot. It adds up over the course of a game, over the course of a season, and Green Bay has to do a better job of form tackling and rallying to the football. And it's not just been an issue on defense, but it's been an issue on special teams as well. You know, this is not something that just happens. It's going to take technique work. And the hard part about this is you know they're not going to practice true tackling in training camp and OTAs and mini camps and certainly not any time during the season. It's not what you do. And it's not like there's a ton of new players. We'll talk about this in our next one as well, that are just all of a sudden going to change the dynamic here. There's a lot of the same players on defense. They're going to have to rally to the football better. They're going to have to, you know, gang tackle better. And they're just going to have to work on their form individually to make sure that these missed tackles are not happening. Because it's been, like I said, an issue for far too long. And it is time to finally get that cleaned up. Number five, run defense. Tackling that we just talked about, definitely still a big piece in this. How many yards do you think the Packers allowed on the ground a season ago? How many rushing yards? Give you a second here. How many rushing yards did the Packers allow on the ground? If you guessed 1,800, you are too low. If you guessed 3,000, you are too high. 2,181 rushing yards allowed. 2,181 rushing yards. Fifth worst in the NFL. That is a ton of rushing yards. They allowed 4.4 yards per carry, which was tied for 10th worst. They allowed 16 runs of 20 plus yards, which was fifth worst. They allowed 120 rushing first downs, which was eighth worst. And like I was mentioning a second ago with tackling, the personnel has not changed a ton when it comes to run defense. It just hasn't. Interior defensive line, who are going to be your core guys? Kenny Clark, TJ Slayton, Carl Brooks, Colby Wooden, Devontae Wyatt, same guys. Who are going to be your four main edge players? Sean Gary, Kingsley Nibare, Preston Smith, LVN, same guys. Your primary linebacker, probably Quay Walker, same guy. Your corners, Jaire Alexander, Eric Stokes to some extent, Carrington Valentine, Keyshawn Nixon, same guys. You're hoping that your run defense can get changed because of a few things. One, you're hoping to just improve. Tackling gets better, those sort of things. But Edgerrin Cooper, Xavier McKinney, and Javon Bullard are your three new personnel changes. And I do think those guys will help, but that's a lot to put on the plates of two rookies and a safety that's going to be playing a ton of deep post. That's not exactly the player that's going to be helping your run. At least you're hoping they don't have to tackle them 30, 40, 50 yards downfield. So it is a lot of the same personnel on this run defense that's been bad for quite some time now. Now, there are some other things that they're going to do as well. We know that they're going to drop that safety into the box a ton. That's going to give you an extra defender. You think that's going to help? Yeah, it's going to help a ton. No question. But it's got to be more than that. It's got to be these guys stepping up and owning it and saying, you know what? We are going to eat our vegetables. We are going to stop the run because you want to get teams in those long third and long, fourth and long, second and 15 sort of situations. If you can get those, you're set up for success. If it's constantly third and three, third and two, third and four, you're setting yourself up for failure. So it is up to this Packers run defense to be much better. It can't just be on Edgerrin Cooper and Javon Bullard and Xavier McKinney. It's got to be on everyone to tackle better, to fill their lane, to fill their gap, and to make sure that they're not giving up another 2,181 yards on the ground in 2024. Number six is red zone blocking on the offensive side of the ball. I could have probably just said red zone offense here because they still have some things to work on, but I believe the core of the problem is the run blocking specifically, but just the blocking up front. The Packers offensive line is not exactly filled with people movers. And when you get into the red zone, third and goal, fourth and goal from the one. You want to be able to move some people. But, you know, Sean Ryan can do a little bit of that. Rashid Walker, not a big time mover. Elton's not a big mover. Myers isn't a big mover. And Zach Tom is not a big mover. You know, they added some guys like Travis Glover. They've got guys like Caleb Jones. You know, Kadeem Telford's a big dude, but you can't just, in most teams at least, don't just sub in bigger offensive linemen in short yardage. You're usually just trying to put your best guys out there. Could they use an extra offensive lineman in some, you know, six offensive line formation? Sure. But either way, this is a group that has to get better at running in short distances. Hopefully Josh Jacobs, just with his power and physicality, can help a little bit with that as well. But this has got to be an offensive line that in red zone situations blocks better. It's going to set up the run game better, the play action better. You know, hopefully just as a blocking as a whole, it sets up Jordan Love to have a little bit more time, which sometimes you need when all those tight windows close up so quickly and you have to kind of ad lib and you know, make do with what you have and make some of those plays off script. So I think if the blocking can get better in the red zone will get a lot better, and you'll see Green Bay put up more points in 2024 than even they did in 2023. Number seven, I'm not going to say corners here entirely, but I think there are a lot of corner question marks. Jair, do we get back to All-Pro Jair? That would certainly be nice. Or do we see kind of the same, he's good, but he's not quite as good? There's some, you know, weirdo behavior maybe in there, or just bizarre behavior. It's not necessarily bad, but it's just different. You know, do you get the Jair that's not run defending? Like, what version of Jair do we get? Or do we just get the best version, which we all know and love? The All-Pro Jair that was unbelievable. That's what we want. But which version do we get? Eric Stokes has not been the same since his rookie season. Carrington Valentine had a nice rookie year, but there's still a lot of growth that's needed there. Keyshawn Nixon got better as the season went along, but it's not like anyone's like, yep, shut down slot corner. Like, he still has ways to go. Corey Ballantyne, you know, is it just a one-year wonder? Is he legitimately taking a step? Like, those are all question marks. It's a lot of question marks for one position. And Kalen King, the next guy, had an awful 2023 campaign in college. Now he's trying to make it in the NFL. Just a lot of question marks for that group as a whole, which makes me lean a little bit more towards weakness, but there's potential answers there as well, which does excite me. Number eight, another big weakness, the San Francisco 49ers. Let's just be real. 2019 NFC Championship game loss, 49ers. 2021 divisional loss, 49ers. 2023 divisional round loss, 49ers. Three big time playoff losses to the San Francisco 49ers, all in the Matt LaFleur era. We don't even need to go back to the Colin Kaepernick stuff. The 49ers have been the Packers' kryptonite in the postseason. There's a very good chance if Green Bay gets to the postseason again, guess who they might just see? The San Francisco 49ers. They have been a thorn in the Packers' side. They have to find a way to overcome it. They have to find a way to get those victories. And if they can't, they're just going to be sent home packing early again. So 49ers have definitely been a weakness for Matt LaFleur, and he's got to find a way to get his team ready to beat that particular team come postseason time. Number nine, creating turnovers. How many interceptions do you think the Packers had last year? Sorry to keep asking you questions. I'll just tell you the answer. Seven. Seven interceptions in the regular season last year. That is atrocious, right? They had the 10th fewest overall turnovers created, meaning fumbles, you know, interceptions, any form of turnover, 10th fewest in the NFL. They have to find a way to generate more turnovers. Now they go and get Xavier McKinney. That should help. Jair looks and seems more like Jair. They get Eric Stokes back. We'll see. A lot of these things should help. Adrian Cooper is a playmaking machine and is somebody that's going to add a lot of speed at that linebacker position. That should help. Hopefully Rashawn can stay healthy and just not have that, you know, sort of hit the wall period in the second half of the season. That should help, but they've got to find a way to create more turnovers. And last but not least, number 10 on my list, making that one last move. That's for Brian Gutekunst and company. This team's been a little bit allergic to making that one final move that puts the Packers over the top. To be fair, there have been some trade deadline opportunities, and had they done those trade deadline deals like a Will Fuller, it would have exploded spectacularly in all the wrong ways. They tried to trade for Chase Claypool. That would have been a nightmare. Emmanuel Sanders, I don't think, would have put them over the top. They've tried some things, and it hasn't worked. You know, they haven't been able to do it, but that hasn't worked. They need to at times recognize when they have the team that's ready to compete and make that final move to put them over the top. Even if that means sacrificing some future draft assets or some future salary cap assets, you figure that out later. This is a team, and I'm not saying it necessarily has to be in 2024, but over the next few years, there's going to be a window that is open, and it could be now, it could be next year, it could be the following year, it could be the year after that. But when that window gets open, let's learn from those Ted Thompson years and even some of the Goody years where they were, again, hesitant to pull the trigger to go get that guy that could potentially put them over the top. They got to find a way to do it differently. This is the NFL. If you're not going to do it, some other team is going to. And those teams, you know, are going to have additional opportunities. So I'm not saying it has to even be at the trade deadline, but find a way to get that extra player where you can. And it could be that, again, you have to make a compromise of something that you don't maybe want to do in the future, but you have to understand when it is time. And when it is, go all in, get those last couple guys that you need and really make that push towards that Super Bowl and try to get that Lombardi back. So to recap, the 10 Packers weaknesses, number one, special teams, number two, youth and inexperience, number three, offensive line depth, number four, tackling, number five, run defense, six, red zone run blocking and just blocking in general in the red zone, number seven, the cornerback question marks, number eight, overcoming the San Francisco 49ers, number nine, creating turnovers, and number 10, making that final move to finally put your roster over the top. That is going to do it for me today. Shout out to our Hall of Fame and All Pro members, Mosey the Minnesotan, PJ Wynn, John Wild, Shea Broad Dad, Brandon Paletta, Boom Handle, Donald Lee, Lori Lord, Baby QB, David McCluskey, Donald Decker, Bremen, David Prendergast, Dan Miller, Alex Wong, and Arnaldo Espinoza. I will see you guys tomorrow, but until next time, and as always, go Pack Go.